Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown, present for the petitioner, Your Honor.
Hi. Okay, you're on. Go ahead.
May it please the court, the petitioner contends that the immigration judge decision of June 4, 2001 and the BIA decision of October 12 denying the respondent's motion to reopen based on lack of credibility, alleged failure to establish changed circumstances is indefensible and cannot be sustained. No reasonable trier fact would come to the same conclusion. And the respondent, the petitioner, makes the following points. The alleged lack of credibility which influenced the IJ's thinking was due mainly to mistranslation of the Ming'an Elementary School Certificate dismissal letter. This plus the adverse credibility findings of inconsistency in respondent's case was flawed. We make also the mistranslation of the letter gave the IJ the erroneous belief that the petitioner was dismissed because his wife had a second child, while respondent testified clearly and consistently that his wife had a second pregnancy and he only had one son. The second pregnancy was aborted July 28, 97. Administrative Record 219. They never had a second birth. Again, this letter dated December 99 does not necessarily conflict with respondent testimony that he was terminated from his job as an elementary school teacher on June 20, 97. Note, the Ming'an Elementary School is in Xinjiang, is a part of Fuzhou, so there's no discrepancy with the alleged location of the Ming'an Elementary School. The respondent explained clearly and reasonably that the letter says Fuzhou City because my village is part of Fuzhou City, Administrative Record 213, lines 7 to 12. Other possible inconsistencies concern the respondent's statement to INS that he was arrested 4 to 5 times in China. Respondent reasonably explained that what he called arrest was merely that he was called in for questioning and he was just questioned and released, but he was not charged with any formal crime, criminal conduct. Administrative Record 234 to 235. The second point the petitioner wished to make is that there were changed circumstances arising in China and the new evidence was not previously available, which justify reopening. When one looks at the facts of this case, although the original trial was 5 years ago, the new situation that gave rise to the changed circumstances was worsening country conditions in China, as evidenced by the wife's affidavit of December, of incidents which occurred to her on December 12, 06, and the new village notice issued on January 4, 07. The petitioner contends that he filed a motion to open within a reasonable time of the changed circumstances which arose in China and that worsening country conditions in China as it relates to him is sufficient changed circumstances. The third point the petitioner wished to make is that a lack of detailed doctrinal knowledge of the Catholic faith for the respondent who was just a beginner Catholic is not essential to his claim that he had a well-founded fear of future persecution. And the fourth point the respondent wishes to make is that the immigration judge did not make any separate assessment concerning whether there was a well-founded fear of future persecution for the respondent. The petitioner reserves 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown. So we'll hear from Mr. Dupree.
Dupree? May it please the Court, Tom Dupree for the United States. The petitioner seeks review of the board's denial of reopening. That is the decision that is currently before the court. And so I think the bulk of petitioner's counsel's argument appears to be an effort to relitigate the IJ's original decision from many years ago, which is not properly before this court. The sole question is whether the board erred in denying his motion to reopen. I think it's a threshold issue. There's a jurisdictional problem. I did not hear anything in the presentation. I'm unable to identify anything in the petitioner's brief that raises a question of law. So I think there's that initial hurdle that the petitioner is hard-pressed to surmount. Even if the petitioner were somehow to overcome it, I think the board's decision plainly does not constitute an abuse of discretion. What happened
in looking at the second page of the board's order, given that the respondent's, respondent presents a village notice, the first paragraph, respondent presents a village notice allegedly obtained from his wife. Now, was this, this is the new evidence, isn't it, rather than the old evidence?
That's right.
Well, I don't understand exactly how the board dealt with that. It says, given that the respondent's claim was found to lack credibility, which seems to be the reference to the original proceeding, this evidence does not provide a basis for reopening. Well, what does that mean exactly?
Well, what I think it means, Your Honor, is that the board examined the reasons why the petitioner's initial asylum request was denied. In this case, it was because the immigration judge determined that he had testified incredibly and had likely committed document fraud. And I think all the board was saying was that this motion to reopen is predicated upon his original claims, which had been discredited.
Yes, but if he has new evidence, what if the new evidence were, you know, unexceptionable evidence? It was a statement by the Chinese government. This guy comes back, we're going to put him in prison because we don't like Catholics. You know, what if it was official announcement by the Chinese government? Wouldn't that entitle him to asylum, even if his original claim had been fraudulent?
I think it's possible that he could, in effect, rehabilitate his credibility if he were to come forward with, as Your Honor posited.
So is the notion that if you've engaged in fraud or lied or what have you before, you have to present very strong evidence? Is that, it's a little hard to get that out of this. Now, it cites a Second Circuit case, 2007, Qin Wen Zhang. What does that say?
That decision, I think, is highly relevant. In fact, it's notable not only because the petitioner's name is the same as in this case, but it's represented by the same lawyer, and the new evidence was essentially the same. It was a village notice effectively purporting to state you will be persecuted if you return. It was supported by an affidavit from the petitioner's wife, which did not actually mention the document that she was furnishing. And what the Second Circuit said was exactly how I think this court should resolve the case if it were to get past the jurisdictional issue, and that is to say, it said the board's conclusion was reasonable, that in a circumstance where a petitioner has been found not to be credible or, as in this case, has likely tendered false documents, it is a reasonable conclusion for the board to say this is not enough. In other words, to take notice of the reasons for the initial denial and factor that in evaluating the sufficiency of the evidence presented on reopening. I think that's an eminently reasonable conclusion, a reasonable approach for the board to take, and not simply accepting something at face value, particularly when the petitioner has already been found to likely have engaged in document fraud and offered non-credible testimony. So I think the Second Circuit's decision is eerily similar to this case in terms of the facts, and I think the way the court should resolve this issue if it were to reach the merits.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Brown, how much time does he have? 5 minutes. Do you have anything further, Mr. Brown?
The only thing further I would add, Your Honor, is that the documents were not found to be fraudulent in the petitioner's case, in this case, and that what appears to be that there was an undue reliance, over-reliance on the country report, which says documents from China are subject to widespread fraud and fabrication, but the actual documents itself, there was no expert testimony or overseas investigation which confirmed that documents are fraudulent, so they should be taken as genuine, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question about the original proceeding, because I couldn't find the answer in the immigration judge's opinion. The immigration judge found that that your client was not familiar with the tenets of Catholicism, and I wondered what do we know? Is it in the record? Maybe Mr. Dupree can answer this. What he was asked about Catholicism that he didn't know?
No, he was asked. He said he was baptized, Judge. He said he was a beginning Catholic, and I think he was asked about the sacraments, and he got them mixed up somehow.
Asked what about the sacraments?
If he knows the seven sacraments, then he could name them, Judge. But
could he name any of them? No, like marriage?
From my recollection, Judge, but I would point out that this we're dealing with a petitioner who was a beginning Catholic, and I would submit that detailed knowledge of Catholicism, doctrinal knowledge of Catholicism, was not necessary in order for him to be eligible for asylum on grounds of religious persecution. And I would rely on Rizal against Gonzalez, 442 F3rd 84, Judge.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Brown. But just let me ask Mr. Dupree, a little out of order. Did you have any recollection of what exactly the tenets that he was not familiar with?
Yes, Your Honor. It appears on page 227 of the administrative record and continues for a couple of pages. It was a colloquy in which the petitioner was initially asked, can you tell the court what the seven sacraments are? And the petitioner begins by saying lazy, greedy, and then they clarify, right, and they say, they explain what the sacraments are to the petitioner, and he identifies baptism, and then he writes something down, and then they ask him if he knows what communion is. Do you know what first communion is? I don't know. Then they ask him a number of other doctrinal questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so thank you, Mr. Brown, and thank you, Mr. Dupree. We'll move on to the next case.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay, next case, the Overman case. Ms.